Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:50 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 21st, and we are one day ahead of Thanksgiving, so the markets are going to be closed tomorrow in the USA, and generally speaking, we can anticipate that it's going to be a pretty light day of trading, but then hedge funds around the world are going to be looking at this as a light day of trading, and therefore often what we see on holidays is that you get a heightened degree of volatility on other markets, where you start to see some attempts by hedge funds to try and pressure positions. Well, I think a lot of people now are starting to think about just how much of a decline are we going to see in the NASDAQ, that it had broken out to new all-time highs, and then it had paused around the 7,000 level and then failed. So one is that we've seen a heightened degree of volatility that was certainly evident in January. And then we've had a much larger pullback. So this is now the largest pullback we've seen since really the beginning of the trend all the way back in 2008. And that's, I think, a meaningful event that we've had this loss of uptrend consistency. So there's certainly more risk attached to this market. But the other point, of course, is that when we look at the major constituents of the index, which are essentially the FANG shares, well, when we think about their potential and the story that they represent, well, the reality is everybody knows the story and everybody knows about their potential. Facebook already has about as many users as it's going to get. And Amazon has already got a significant chunk, approximately half of all retail sales that are conducted online now accrue to Amazon in the USA. When we think about where their growth is, it's internationally. And then their growth is also within the online retail sector. Online retail now accounts for approximately 10% of consumer spending. Well, Amazon's clear growth trajectory is to get an increasingly large chunk of that consumer spending pile of money. Well, when we then think about Amazon, there's a clear bullish narrative there. There is a potential here that $1,500 is the low. But if the buy the dip strategy is going to continue to represent the clearest way to get a bargain in some of these high momentum shares, well, then that $1,500 area absolutely needs to hold, and then it needs to push through 2,000. So we're talking about awfully big numbers here, and that's an awfully big ask considering the size of the decline that we've already seen in Amazon. What that suggests is that an awful lot of good news has already been priced in, considering that the price doubled in the 9 months between that breakout above $1,000 and its test of the $2,000. That's a significant uptick in the pace of the advance, and particularly relative to the way it had been advancing previously. So I think let's be a little bit more articulate. I don't think it's appropriate to think of Amazon as the big buying opportunity today as it would have been previously, for the simple reason that a lot of good news has already been priced in. It's the same thing with Apple, that when you think about the number of people who have an iPhone and the number of people who want a new one, well, they're getting up there relative to the number of people in the world. So that's a headwind for Apple. Then when you think about the likes of, we've looked at Netflix, for example. Well, Netflix has got to break into somewhere like India and do enormously successful business there if they are going to continue to grow at the pace that they have been. But international expansion is expensive and it takes time, and you have to cater your product to the domestic market. So Netflix is going to have to get busy producing a lot more Bollywood type products if they're going to break into India, and that is capital intensive. Well, against all of that background, we have the fact that high yield spreads are rising. So these capital intensive businesses are starting to now face the potential that they're going to have to pay more for the capital they need to grow their businesses. Well, when we think about those FANG shares that have been doing so fantastically well, I think that they probably represent the first half of this bull market. Well, when we think about what the next half is, let's think about the things that have got great promise but don't yet reside within our homes, or that we're not already spending a great deal of money on. Well, one of those has got to be electric vehicles. We know that there is an enormous amount of investment going into battery production, that is going to result in the commoditization of batteries, that the cost is falling at a rate of about 20% per annum in terms of the battery production costs. That does not really say much about the efficiency of those batteries, but rather that the cost of the batteries is contracting significantly. Then that is going to represent a significant change that when all those battery factories come online. So that is out in the future. That is something that is going to be an enormously disruptive event within the next 2 to 3 years, and it's going to represent also a significant productivity gain. It's going to also represent a massive saving from the perspective of your regular consumer, because the electric car will be cheaper than it is today, certainly, and then also the running costs are lower. Everything from servicing the vehicle to fuel are all lower. So that puts a lot more money in people's pockets, and that should help to increase consumer spending. That's the kind of thing that can really help to fuel a secular advance, and that's before we even begin to talk about autonomy. Well, it may take another few years to get autonomy up and running, and it may take another couple of years to get autonomy regulated to a point where administrations of various states and cities around the world are going to be comfortable with it. But once they are comfortable with it, well, then that is an enormous technological advance, and it is going to be a complete game changer for the global economy. So then it's going to unleash waves of productivity potential. So that's an additional source of a potential benefit from the technology sector that is not particularly reflected in the NASDAQ. Well, Google is perhaps the leading company right now that is developing this autonomy, so that is one of the FANG shares. So now the big question is whether this $1,000 level is going to hold, because the trend now is considerably less consistent than it used to be. We can no longer say that Google is trending higher in a consistent manner. Doesn't mean that it can't trend higher in an inconsistent manner, but it's going to be a lot more difficult to deal with from a trend running perspective. The key variable is going to be whether it can sustain this move or bounce from the $1,000 level. Then the question is whether it can push back above the trend mean. We could easily be in another one of these 18-month or even longer ranges that we saw, for example, back in 2014 and halfway through 2015. So that does suggest that the technology sector has had pretty good innings, and that it is likely to represent a definitely a rotation, not just in terms of stock market leadership, but also within the technology sector itself. Well, what we're also starting to see now is that the semiconductors index was in positive territory in here today, but this has type 2 top formation characteristics, and it would really have an awful lot of work to do to question that this isn't a completing top formation. So it's not really in semiconductors that we could really be looking for the potential for leadership to evolve here either. So I think electric cars are certainly one of the potential sectors that could benefit, and also the battery sector is exhibiting relative strength. That's a very clear trend right now. What I was also paying particular attention to a few weeks ago, I haven't looked at it since, is some of these shares that have been really out in the wilderness for the last few years. There are now only two 3D printing companies, and this is still a base formation, but these are the kinds of shares that will be certainly worth keeping an eye on when they do eventually break up and out of their respective bases. Then we also have the fact that there is continued rapid innovation within the biotechnology sector, but that does not hide the fact that these indices are really heavily influenced by the mega cap companies within them. And Celgene is the largest constituent in the index, and it has also been trending lower for more than a year already. So that is, I think, obviating the relative performance, for example, of Amgen, which it has still held this sequence of higher reaction lows. And of course, that's really only the larger cap shares, whereas all the growth in biotech comes from the smaller cap companies. Well, immuno-oncology has also pulled back rather violently over the course of the last few months, but that is a sector that is moving increasingly towards commercial utility. And that also has the potential to be a significant driver in terms of a technology-led bull market. Well, of course, we need that technology and productivity growth because of the fact that there is an incredible amount of debt that remains outstanding. Well, 10-year Treasury yields have continued to hold this move above 3%, despite the fact that stock markets have been pulling back rather sharply. So we've definitely had episodes over the course of the last while where bonds and equities have been falling together, and that's not a particularly happy set of circumstances, particularly for risk parity strategies. But there is an awful lot of additional supply that's coming to the market, particularly in December. So that's likely to represent a headwind to an additional rally in the bond price. But the bigger question, the question that everyone is likely asking right now, is what is the Fed going to do in terms of its monetary policy? So if we look at money market futures and go out a little bit in terms of timing, looking at the third month continuation chart, well, there has been this very clear downtrend, but this has been a reasonable rally over the course of the last while. When we turn that around and look at the yield, well, we can also see that there has been a significant move and that it is pricing in a 3% interest rate. Well, 3% is essentially assuming that there is going to be a 25% interest rate hike in December, and then that there will be at least another two next year. Well, that's not far off what the 2-year yield is pricing in as well. Now, the bigger question is whether that is in fact true. There's certainly a market in views here. JP Morgan is talking about four additional rate hikes next year. Neel Kashkari is saying that the Fed needs to pause, and Powell is starting to talk about being aware of the challenges that the fact that we are probably coming towards the end of the fiscal impetus, that trade wars are starting to take a toll on sentiment, and the stock market has pulled back. Well, the other big question, of course, is with regard to China. And I don't hold out a particular hope that China and the US are going to come to any form of lasting accommodation when President Trump and Xi Jinping meet at the G20 on November 30th. But what we do know is that the stock market is oversold, and that we're right in the region of the lows. So now the big question is, are we going to get a bounce from these levels? And that's an awfully big question. We are at I think, a rather critical juncture in here. And if we do see a bounce, well, then that will hold out the prospect that we are going to see continued ranging. The fact that the banking sector has been reasonably steady is, I think, representative of at least some view that we have stability here, but it does need to push back above the trend mean, and so far it has not been able to do that. JP Morgan has been particularly steady, and that had been the leading advancer in the banking sector off the lows in 2009. But Goldman Sachs and indeed Morgan Stanley have been trending lower. And that commonality, obviously, Goldman Sachs has had this headwind from its association with the 1MDB scandal in Malaysia, but it's a credit provider. And generally speaking, in a bull market, one could anticipate that credit providers should be doing well. Well, the move up in the dollar and the fact that international high yield has been rising much faster than US high yield spreads, that does suggest that for big international banks that have been rather aggressively lending internationally, then they are perhaps at more risk than domestic-oriented banks. Nonetheless, with high-yield spreads starting to rise, that is something that is likely to represent a headwind for the equity markets. So there are certainly challenges, and we certainly have a rotation that's going on, and that is certainly a hallmark of a medium-term correction. And then you also have these very big name people like Ray Dalio and Howard Marks writing books about debt cycles and starting to sound warnings about the fact that we are late in the cycle. Well, we're certainly late in the cycle, but the kinds of things that represent, I think, lead indicators for future recessions are not yet flashing red. The fact that high yield spreads have just started to move higher, well, generally, that contributes to a headwind when they've been rising for a few months, not the day after that they have broken out. So that's one fact. Then you have the fact that the yield curve spread is still not inverted, although it has certainly flattened out over the course of the last while. And it's still around the 25 basis point level. You still have unemployment that is trending lower, and that's unlikely to be a lead indicator, but it's at least a coincident indicator of stress in the market because you can't have a recession without people losing their jobs. So certainly we have a period of market stress right now, but we are also approaching the most seasonally favorable time of the year. It often starts off with a sharp pullback. If we look at, for example, a decade of history and just go back and look at what does in fact happen in Octobers. It's not at all unusual that you get pullbacks in October and November, and then you get strong rallies going into the end of the year. Well, that was particularly the case in 2014, and but you also had a significant rally off the lows in October. In 2013, it's exactly the same in 2012. Then you also had a pullback in early December, but also in early October in 2011. So it is not at all unusual that you can get a rebound at this time of the year. So we are at a very critical juncture because uptrends have lost consistency. We are in a medium-term correction. There is no question about that. And it would be remiss to think that this corrective phase is over. But we definitely have short-term oversold conditions. And then that would suggest that we are due a bounce in here. Well, the other market that has a very short-term oversold condition is Brent crude. And to type more effectively, but it's been down for 7 consecutive weeks and today represented the first sign of some buying pressure starting to come in, but it certainly hasn't been enough yet to pressure the shorts. We have a sequence of ranges one below another, and a rally of more than $3 is going to be required to break this sequence of lower rally highs. Natural gas, on the other hand, having roared higher last week has begun to lose momentum, and not least around this $5 area. $5 has been a level above which natural gas hasn't been able to hold a rally since 2009. The fact that it has raced to get up to this level does suggest that we are due for at least some consolidation, and particularly if weather warms up a little right across the eastern seaboard, but also if infrastructure to get natural gas to market improves as well. It's not as if there's any shortage of natural gas, it's simply that there's a lack of infrastructure to get it to the market in a timely manner. And gold prices were in mildly positive territory in here today, up about $3. Well, the move above 1200 continues to hold, and gold has been out in the wilderness now for the last few months. It's hasn't been particularly volatile. That's certainly not the case with the equity markets. It really does need a catalyst to help to drive it higher, but there is the potential that that will occur. I think the big takeaways from Ray Dalio's book is that the end game for the quantity of debt that's outstanding is monetization, and that the best way to deal with it would be a mix of monetary and fiscal stimulus. It does appear that that is what the USA is doing, and the fact that the US consumer and banking sectors are not as leveraged as they were back in 2007, that's certainly a positive development. But the bigger point is that high yield spreads have been trending higher in Asia for over a year already. If one were to look for where the consumer is highly levered, where the property markets are highly levered, where the government is highly levered, well, then you're certainly thinking about places like China and markets that are dependent on China. So when we do look at the signals for where there really is the potential for a problem in the credit markets, well, it's in China. That's where the real epicenter of risk is right now. And that's equally the case in Europe, considering that the market continues to explore this contradiction that underlies the entire European project. Well, I think it's also worth keeping an eye on what's going on in Japan, because Japan, the Nikkei has bounced now today from above the 21,000 level. It's certainly been subject to a great deal of volatility over the last while. But the second section index is the best performing small cap index in the world right now. And it has failed to sustain that move below 7,000. And it has now rallied back up to test that sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of this year. So this is a rather important level for the Japanese markets. If the second section breaks on the upside, that's been a very reliable lead indicator for the outlook for the Nikkei. So that's certainly a market to keep an eye on. And the Nifty index has paused around the region of the trend mean, but importantly, the rupee has continued to steady, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. Well, now this represents a large enough rally for the rupee that it is questioning the consistency of the decline. And now the big question is whether it is going to hold this 74 level on the next occasion that the dollar rallies. And the Brazilian market has also remained really quite steady, and the real has also been firm, so that's reasonably positive for that market. Then you have the inauguration of AMLO the Argentinian market. I meant to type in the Mexican market. The Mexican market has been selling off rather aggressively, and you had AMLO being inaugurated in here today. Well, this is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and certainly that is a rather large source of uncertainty, since populist left-wing politicians aren't particularly market-friendly historically. And the the Mexican peso is trending lower. So that suggests that there is still capacity here for dollar strength. And that's despite the fact that the dollar index was in mildly negative territory in here today. The much more important fact is that it had a large outside day yesterday, and that it's holding its sequence of higher reaction lows since September. Well, that continued strength in the dollar does represent a headwind for some of the emerging markets, but particularly those that have got a lot of US dollar debt. When we look at the Asian markets, then Thailand is at a rather interesting area here. It's right at the upper side of that underlying 5-year range, well, 4-year range. Now the question is whether it is going to hold that level. The Philippine peso has been a little steadier of late, and the Philippine composite now is right in the region of this 7,000 level and testing the progression of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 5 years. The Taiwanese market had broken down below that psychological 10,000 level, and the Indonesian market is now testing the region of the trend mean and the upper side of what is effectively a 6-month range. And the Singaporean market has been largely range bound since 2010. It wasn't quite able to hold that breakout to new highs at the beginning of the year, and it's continuing to trend lower. Well, that's representative of the downward pressure that continues to be exerted on the global financial sector. So what that, I think, is representative of is tightening credit conditions, but most particularly in Asia, and that is where the epicenter of credit risk, I think, resides, but most particularly within Asia, then China, considering the quantity of debt that's outstanding and the fact that we simply do not know what the natural rate of default is. So we're still in a corrective phase. There are a considerable number of things that people are worried about. We have rangers on Wall Street, and that tells us that supply and demand have come back into a relative equilibrium, and there is a war going on between supply and demand right now. Well, the buy the dip strategy has been the best performing strategy over the course of the last decade. Well, if investors lose faith in that, well, then that will contribute to a top formation. That's certainly something we have to be, I think, aware of. The best case scenario is that what we're seeing in the market right now is akin to what we saw back in 2015 and 2016. I think that there is a reasonable chance that that is the case, although this is already a somewhat larger pullback than we saw then. But what we need to see if that is indeed the case, that is that the lows hold and that we start to push back above the respective trend means. At the minimum, there is a significant rotation going on, and most particularly towards defensive sectors. Well, that demand for defensive sectors can is also not especially a bullish characteristic for the broader market, because people don't generally get really enthusiastic about defensive sectors unless they're worried about just about everything else. But it is also a response to the fact that interest rates are rising and that equities are essentially a floating rate debt instrument, and that the potential for dividends to rise is at least a partial hedge against inflation. That's a very good reason to favor defensive sectors rather than simply that you're worried about everything else. I think the deciding arbiter on whether this is a correction or a top is going to be Fed policy. The Federal Reserve has killed off more bull markets than just about any other factor combined. So what they do now is going to represent whether we get a tailwind for the market or whether they make a mistake and push the US economy into a recession. So we're at, I think, a very delicate situation right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish happy Thanksgiving to all of you.